Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
It is 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater, and we are at program 279 in the series, Lisa Wolf. That's who you are in the green.
That's me. I'm green because we have a special green program tonight.
It ain't easy being green.
It's all about the
Remember
green.
Remember that?
Yeah,
yeah,
but I'm talking about the green jug. So I decided
that's
to wear green, but
right.
We're going to get to
sense.
That. Thank
Do I have
you.
Any green? Well, I have blue, but that's not.
That's definitely. You're just one color
green.
Off.
Well, yeah. We are going to listen to classic radio shows tonight. The Adventures of Ellery Queen, Suspense, and This Is Your FBI. We're also going to talk to Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Cat's Pride, and also Dave Weiske. He is the Vice President of Customer Success. But before we do that, we're going to play our game, Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote. What is the movie?
The movie is Full Metal Jacket.
Oh, gosh.
Good movie. That. And the prize for tonight will be two tickets to see the musical Company, which is playing right now at Mercury Theater Chicago in their cabaret stage.
All
great show.
All right. Sounds great. Call now, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We'll take the 12th caller. Call now. Play the game with us live on the air. We'll have Dave and Dan play as well. Call now, play the game. Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
And we have Mark on the line to play with us. Hi, Mark.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Very fine. I love this program. I listen to it every weekend.
Oh, I'm so glad you got through. You were caller number 12, and we're glad to have you playing with us. The movie is Full Metal Jacket. You know what to do. You tell us which is the correct quote from the movie, and we're going to ask Carl, and we're going to ask our friends from Cat's Pride to help us out tonight. We'll see what somebody will get it right. So there's four of us here.
Oh,
we're getting
it right.
We're bound.
I know this movie backward and forward.
Is that right?
Yes.
All right, here we go. Mark, you ready?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Quote number one. And the first and last words out of your filthy sewers will be, sir. Quote number two. My dear sir, you will haunt me for the rest of my life. Quote number three. They die hard, those savage men.
It's either one or three. I'm going to say one.
Number one.
He's right.
Carl, Carl's jumping out of his seat. He can't stand it. Carl, you like number one?
Yep.
Okay.
Dan.
I got it. What do you guys think? We'll go to Dan first.
I haven't seen this movie forward or backward, so I'm going with one.
All right, Dave?
Oh, wait a minute, Dave. Hang on a second. Okay, go ahead.
I'm picking three.
Number three.
Ooh.
All right. Well, it's definitely one or three. I'm going to give you that clue. We're going to let Curtis let us know which is correct.
And the first and last words out of your filthy sewers will be, sir.
All right. Well, we've got almost a sweep here. Mark, you got it. You're a winner. You know what you've won?
A chance to talk to you, which makes me a winner.
Aww. Oh, you are so nice. Well, I feel really good about that too, Mark. And in addition to that opportunity, you get two tickets to Stephen Sondheim's musical Company. It's a great show. It's playing through June 3rd at the Mercury Theater Chicago in their new Venus Cabaret stage. I saw it. I loved it. Hope you have a chance to get up there and see the show.
Definitely.
Thank you. Check it out at mercurytheaterchicago.com. It was great to talk to you, Mark. All right, here we are.
All
good to
right.
have Dan and Dave with us from Cat's Pride.
Let's talk about the latest, greatest going on with Cat's Pride. Talk all about it, Dan. Tell our listeners why they should be switching over to the green jug.
It's three simple words, litter for good.
That's right.
This is our new shelter program where we are committed to donating a pound of free cat litter for every green jug of Cat's Pride we sell. And the goal is to sell millions each year. And the way we direct those donations is all the listeners and our consumers have to do is go to catspride.com, join our club for free, and then nominate their local shelter. And then the more nominations the shelters get, the more litter they're going to get. And then they have to go out and buy the green jug and tell all their friends to buy the green jug. It's that simple.
And they'll be saving cats and dogs' lives by doing this because the money that litter that you're donating to these shelters, they don't have to use money to buy litter anymore. So they can use that money to help get these cats and dogs adopted as opposed to euthanizing them.
Absolutely. 3 million cats go into shelters every year in the U.S., and only 1.5 million get adopted. So you do the math.
Dan, since this program started, tell us about the success of the program and how much you've donated. Or Dave.
Sure, I'll take it. You know, the cool thing is walking around the office and going by Leah's little area and just asking her how things are going. We hit the million pound mark this week, which is extremely exciting.
So 1 million pounds of cat litter has been donated thus far.
It's for donation. We're still coordinating with those respective shelters, but we hit the million mark, and that's a big, big mark.
And how long does this start?
Started in January.
Jeez, already. So it's going to be multi-millions of pounds every year.
I think it's because you're talking about it on our show, and all our listeners are all pitching in to be involved in this donation process.
I sure hope they are, because you know what? Dan Jaffe, Dave Weiske, and the company Oil Dry and Cat's Pride, they have been our sponsor from day one. They believe in this program, and I hope our listeners will do them a solid and switch over to Cat's Pride, because Cat's Pride sponsors the show.
Well, they're not really doing us a favor. They'd be doing it because it is not only the best product, but such a generous company. And, I mean, who can't use more litter in all of the shelters around? So we hope that you'll join the club.
Tremendous humanitarian effort by Dan and his company there. So tell us where you can get Cat's Pride. If you're not finding Cat's Pride somewhere, then you're not looking
hard enough
because
it's pretty much everywhere, right? That's correct. I mean, you know, again, talking about some of the big stores here, we'll talk Walmart. Walmart is everywhere. I mean, I think I heard a metric that there's a Walmart store within 10 miles of everybody's home in the U.S., which is incredible.
Oh, man.
We're in Albertsons. We're in Publix.
We're in Meijer, Jewel,
locally here in the Chicagoland area for sure. In fact, Jewel is coming up with the second wave of the Monopoly program, and we're on display, and it's a beautiful display. You get to see Dan and Catherine on this display, which is pretty cool.
That's Catherine Heigl.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, just in case, just so it's clear.
Everybody knows that.
And Dan's actually shooting commercials with Catherine. He's doing, I mean, this is really great. You are like the face of the Cat's Pride. It's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, and don't forget online. So again, I know, you know, we talk about online, the ease of shopping with Amazon, Walmart.com, or we talk about Chewy.com, and they're great partners, and we're excited about that relationship.
And another reason why you should be switching over, talk about the lightweightness and how it's the best product out there as well.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, we know that people use cat litter because of odor control, absorbency, low dust, low tracking, and we have all those things. And that's job one. You have to have that. But in addition to that, we've also known for years consumers use the product by volume. They fill to 2 or 3 inches. So if you could take weight out, if you could find more porous materials that have more absorbency and therefore weigh less per cubic foot, it would be an advantage because our 10-pound jug is exactly the same size, meaning the same volume, as the competition's 20. So you get the same fills. You get the fill to 3 inches, but it weighs half as much.
And
the
same amount of uses.
It's easier to bring home, but guess what? You can put twice as many units in a truckload, so it cuts the carbon footprint nearly in half, which is pretty
huge.
Phenomenal.
And you're not breaking your back bringing it into the house.
Right.
Yeah. So, folks, please do switch over to Cat's Pride.
And look for the green jug. It's all about the green jug.
Plus, Dan and Dave give away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter to one of our lucky listeners
every single month.
And we're going to do that right now. Drum roll, please.
Let's see who's lucky.
I have a name.
All right, let's do it.
Carolyn Gross and her cat Cookie.
Carolyn Gross.
And her cat Cookie from Lake Villa, Illinois.
All right.
Congratulations.
Congrats. You're a lucky winner, folks. If you want to get in your picture of your kitty cat, do that by taking a picture of your kitty cat. Well, of course, anyone who has a cat has a picture, right, Lisa?
For sure. And, you should see my phone.
And email it to us here at catspridephoto@gmail.com. Catspridephoto@gmail.com. Make sure your name, your address.
Your cat's name and city
cat's
and state.
Name, all that good stuff. I got to tell you, it's such a pleasure to have Dan and Dave in here. Thanks so much for all you do. All these kitties and doggies you're saving all over the country. Big thank you to you.
Well, thank you, and keep up the great work. And I have one question. What's the suspense for tonight?
Oh, suspense. We've got a good one. It's The Black Shawl with Dame Mae Whitty and Maureen O'Sullivan from 1944. That's nice. Our second show. Our first show is Ellery Queen. In fact, we're going to do that right now. Let's go back to May 6, 1948. This is called One Diamond. It stars Sidney Smith, part one of The Adventures of Ellery Queen.
Ellery Queen. In the interests of a safer American home, a happier American community, a more united state, the American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations bring you Ellery Queen, celebrated fighter of crime. As usual, Ellery invites you to match wits with him as he relates the mystery. And before revealing the solution, he gives you a chance to solve it. Tonight, Ellery's guest armchair detective, who will represent you home armchair detectives, is the popular vocalist, Miss Peggy Lee. And now, here's Ellery Queen, your host for the next half hour.
Thank you, Paul Masterson, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, we meet Mr. Mark Gallows, who played a very dangerous game. I call it One Diamond. And this is...
Miss Eve Angel, Mr. Queen.
How do you do?
How do you do, Mr. Queen?
Won't you sit down, Miss Angel?
I'd love it.
Notes, Nikki.
Yes, Ellery.
Is this your secretary?
Yes, I'm his secretary.
Miss Angel, Miss Porter.
How do you do?
How do you do?
And what can I do for you, Miss Angel?
Mr. Queen, I've come to invite you for the weekend at the home of my employer.
Well, I'm tempted to say, this is so sudden. Isn't there some mistake?
Oh, no. I'm sure, Mr. Queen, you've heard of Mark Gallows.
Mark Gallows? You work for Gallows?
I'm Mr. Gallows' secretary. The Gallows Diamond.
What, Nikki?
The Gallows Diamond, Ellery. It's not been publicly displayed for... How long is it, Miss Angel? 40 or 50 years?
That's the Gallows. You are an efficient secretary, Miss Porter, aren't you?
I do my little best, Miss Angel.
But I don't get this, Miss Angel. I've never met Mr. Gallows. Why should he invite me for a weekend?
Because I asked him to.
Oh, I'm to be your guest?
In a way.
What, Nikki?
Nothing. I just went...
Will you come?
Yes.
Goody-goody, a weekend off.
Oh, no, Nikki. You're coming with me.
For notes, Ellery?
Yes, for notes.
Do come too, Miss Porter, for notes. Friday afternoon, Mr. Queen, at the Riverdale Estate.
Miss Angel.
Yes?
Why did you ask Mr. Gallows to invite me?
See you Friday. Au revoir.
Interesting.
Yes, isn't she?
No, I mean the invitation, Nikki. Of course, this is Gallows doing, not her idea at all.
Want to bet?
Oh, don't be silly, Nikki. There's skullduggery involved.
Is Gallows the type?
Mark Gallows? Don't you know anything about him, Nikki?
Just that he's one of the richest men in America.
He's a misophobe.
A hoosophobe?
Afflicted with misophobia, Nikki. Morbid fear of dirt.
Dirt?
Mm-hmm. Gallows is supposed to have a gold-plated washstand in every room he commonly uses so that he can wash his hands on a second's notice.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, that's the story. Buys germicides by the gallon, picks strange objects up with a specially sterilized tissue.
Oh, must be rough on his wife.
No, fortunately, he's not married. Wonder what's behind this invitation.
A two-legged word spelled E-V-E.
Oh, no, Nikki. She's just bait.
I'll answer right away, Ellery.
Oh, never mind, Nikki. I'll go. Yes? Nobody here. Who is it? Oh.
Ellery, what was that? That sounded just like a show. Ellery. Ellery!
Listen to me.
Ellery, no. but Ellery, well, you
what
can't.
What are you thinking of, son?
Oh, he's a fool, Inspector.
You're not getting out of this bed, Ellery, and that's that.
But I'm all right, I tell you.
All right.
With a bullet wound in your arm?
It's nothing, just a flesh wound. You heard the doctor.
It's that woman, that's what it is.
Oh, it's not that woman at all, Nicky. It's the whole thing.
You think the attempt on your life is connected with the invitation, son?
When I'm shot at within 2 minutes, Dad? Of course. Somebody followed Eve Angel, guessed her purpose, and tried to rub me out.
But why?
To keep me from going to the gallows place this weekend, Nicky. Which is why I'll be there if I have to go in an ambulance.
And come back in a hearse. Ellery, be sensible.
You're still shaky, son.
I'm going.
You're not.
I won't let you, Ellery. By gosh, I'm still your father, and you'll do as I say.
And this is the gold room, Mr. Queen.
Really royal, Miss Angel.
That is a washstand, isn't it?
Yes, Miss Porter. By the way, when you meet Mark, I'd suggest you don't offer to shake hands. Germs, you know. Germs.
I suppose we all have them.
Yes. Let's go out onto the terrace. I want you to meet Mark's other house guests.
Oh, I think that'd be delightful.
We have a sort of international house here this weekend, Mr. Queen.
Oh, really?
Mark and I are Americans. Sidney Duff Brown, the Englishman. Cornelius Van Cleek of Holland. And Reginald Doss, who's an Anglo-Indian.
Oh.
What's the matter, Mr. Queen?
Oh, nothing, Miss Angel. You bumped my sore arm.
Oh, I am sorry. Shots?
Yes, shots.
Oh, dear. Now I'll have to be so careful not to let you get romantic, Mr. Queen. Oh, by the way, before we go out there, when you meet Mr. Duff Brown, Mr. Van Cleek, and Mr. Doss, could you act just a little mysterious?
Hmm?
Just to impress them, you know. The great detective.
Oh, would it make you happy, Miss Angel?
Oh, very.
Then I'll do my best.
This is going to be such an exciting weekend.
Shall we go out?
Yes, I think that would be a good idea.
It's right this way.
Oh, yes.
Oh, there they are. Gentlemen?
Ah, Miss Angel again.
With my guests. George, I didn't know we were going to have any competition.
Miss Porter and Mr. Queen. Mr. Reginald Doss. Well,
how do you do,
my
Mr.
pleasure.
Mr. Doss.
Mr. Cornelius Van Cleek.
Glad to know you.
And Mr. Sidney Duff Brown.
How do you do,
Mr. Duff Brown?
I'll fix something for you people in a moment.
Miss Porter, is it?
That's right, Mr. Van Cleek. Nicky Porter.
Watch Van Cleek, Miss Porter. He's a lady killer.
Or he thinks he is.
Now, don't mind those fellows. What do you do, Miss Porter? Except the beautiful, I mean.
Oh, I work for Mr. Queen here.
Oh, work for him? In trade? By George, incredible.
This is an amazing country.
Well, not half so amazing as Nicky, Mr. Daz. I really don't know what I'd do without her.
Working for Mr. Queen isn't really being in trade, Mr. Duff Brown.
No.
Definitely not. You see, he's Ellery Queen, the famous detective.
Really?
Your drink, Mr. Queen.
Oh, thank you very much.
Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Porter. I forgot yours. What can I get you?
Not a thing, thank you.
But the detective, Mr. Queen, this is exciting.
I quite agree with Mr. Das. Are you here socially, Mr. Queen?
Or are you after one of us?
Why, Mr. Van Cleek, do you gentlemen have guilty consciences?
Oh, dear, that's Mark. Yes, Mark.
Is that fellow Queen out there?
Yes.
Bring him in here.
Is Mr. Gallows in the habit of referring to all his guests as that fellow, Miss Angel?
Never mind, Nicky. If you gentlemen will excuse us. Back through this terrace door, Miss Angel?
That's right. This way, please.
Miss Angel, there's something very strange going on
will
here.
Will you come this way,
Nicky.
Please? Right in here.
Well, there you are. Confounded Eve, you've got to do something about Reeves. He put my newspaper on my desk without spraying it first.
I'll discharge him right away, Mark. Here, I'll get you a sterile.
No, don't touch it, Eve. Well, so this is the famous Ellery Queen.
And my secretary, Miss Porter.
How do you do?
I'm afraid, Queen, we've rather put one over on you.
Have you, Mr. Gallows?
Oh, it does seem such a waste, Mark. He's so attractive.
Then you were bait, Miss Angel. All right, Mr. Gallows, now that you've got me here, what next?
Why, Queen, now you leave.
What?
That's right. He served his purpose, my girl. You'll please leave now, Queen. So?
This way out.
Ellery Queen, are you going to stand here and let these...
Oh, no, Nicky. Mr. Gallows...
Oh, dear. He's going to be difficult.
There's no difficulty, Eve, that can't be smoothed out with a little money. Send me your bill, Queen, whatever your fee is.
I don't charge fees.
No? Then what do you live on? Nuts?
I don't know exactly what double-dealing intrigue you've whipped up here, Mr. Gallows, but certain things are fairly obvious.
Oh, are they? This interests me, Queen. What's obvious?
You're the owner of one of the most famous diamonds in the world. You have three house guests, Mr. Duff Brown of England, Mr. Das of India, and Mr. Van Cleek of Holland. Now, England is the spearhead of the world's diamond trade. India's Maharajas are the world's greatest collectors of precious stones. Holland is the capital of the world's lapidaries. I'd say Duff Brown, Das, and Van Cleek are here to buy your diamond, Mr. Gallows.
Be quiet. Yes, Mr. Queen?
Why, we're suddenly all politeness.
Why you scheme to have me put in an appearance here, I don't know. But would it interest you, Mr. Gallows, to learn that within minutes of Miss Angel's visit to my home, I was shot at with intent to kill?
Your arm. Mark,
what? Nonsense. That can't have anything to do with me.
Somebody didn't want me to show up here, Mr. Gallows.
You're a writer, aren't you?
Yes.
This is real life. Get out.
Mr. Gallows, you're an idiot. Come on, Nicky.
That was definitely an organ there too, Lisa.
I'm no positive comment. No comment to that.
The Adventures of Ellery Queen, One Diamond. That's part one. We have more after these words. I've had a very long, long time crush on Deborah Norville.
Really? Yes. Does she know?
Well, if she doesn't know, she may know now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm sure now that she knows,
that's
things might change for you.
Beautiful woman. All right, it's time now for the conclusion to The Adventures of Ellery Queen.
Excellent, excellent brandy, Mr. Gallows.
Yes, excellent.
I'm glad you like it, gentlemen. Now, Eve.
Yes, Mark?
Go out there and close the door and stand in front of it. Keep those long-nosed flunkies of mine away, do you understand?
Mark, you're going to...
Go ahead, go ahead.
Oh, but I wanted to see it.
Eve, I said get out of here.
All right, Mark. Gentlemen, will you excuse me?
Oh, but...
Oh, no, don't bother to get up, please. Have fun. Oh,
thank you. Thank you.
Well, gentlemen.
I have the very odd feeling, mes confrères, that this is the great moment.
Hadn't you better have someone lock that door, sir?
My estate is well patrolled, F. Brown. Mr. Das, you don't look very interested.
This is an old story with me, Mr. Gallows.
Is it? Then look at this.
For 150 carats, Mr. Gallows.
162 and three quarters, Mr. Vinfleet.
Larger than the Porter Rhodes from Kimberley.
And of just as fine a water, Duff Brown.
May I examine this, Mr. Gallows?
Certainly, Doss, certainly.
Doss, let me see that.
One moment, Mr. Duff Brown.
The Gallows diamond, colossal.
My father's wedding gift to my mother. Very sentimental man, my father. His will provided that the stone mustn't be touched for 25 years after my mother's death. Uh-huh. It's been a great trial to me, gentlemen. Very unproductive. Money gathers money. Diamonds gather dust. Does? Do you like it?
Mr. Gallows, it is quite the most superb imitation I have ever seen.
Imitation? I say, Van Cleek, stop pushing. By George, it's not genuine.
Is it a jest, Mr. Gallows? I have come all the way from Amsterdam.
This is an exact copy. Worthless, of course, but sufficient for you gentlemen to base your bids on.
When may we see that genuine stone, Mr. Gallows?
It won't be exhibited, Van Cleek, until I get what I consider a selling bid, confirmed by the principal for whom you're acting as agent.
I can't say, Mr. Gallows, I feel entirely comfortable. I've never had my integrity questioned before.
Nor I.
Nor I.
I'm sorry. I have to be careful, gentlemen. You force me to show my hand. Yeah. That fellow Queen, the detective whom I had Miss Angel invite a few days ago for the weekend. Actually, she engaged him in my behalf to... check up on you gentlemen.
This is intolerable, Mr. Gallows. What is your meaning?
Queen came here today to tell me the result of his investigation. He tells me that one of you was a fraud, an imposter.
Impostor?
Yes. An international jewel thief who's here with forged credentials. Can you blame me for being careful? Oh, Eve, you should have seen their faces.
You're so clever, Mark.
Yeah, you think I'm not, though? Oh, I get a kick out of this sort of thing, Eve, outsmarting them. Hey, you don't know these fellows the way I do, Evie. They're canny traders. They take their time.
But they won't in this case.
Why, they'll fall all over themselves, proving they're not fakes. Each one will rush to make his bid and present me with confirming authority from his principal. Things are going to hum around here, darling. And I'll bet you I get 20% more for the diamond.
Mark.
What?
Look at this.
Is that charred scrap of paper? What is it?
Take it. Read it.
What's the matter with you? Wait till I spray it.
So you invented the story that one of them is a crook, did you? When, of course, all the time they're all honest men.
I don't know what you're talking about. Where'd you find this, Eve?
Living room fireplace. It just missed getting burned. Of course, it doesn't say much.
Wait a minute. This is the beginning of a letter. To me,
I didn't see this.
Neither did I.
Dear Mr. Gallus, we regret that our representative has been delayed. Will not be able to arrive in the United States until May 15th to inspect the gallows.
Eve, my lie was true. One of them is an imposter. Where's the rest of this, Eve? Talk, will you? The envelope, the rest of the letterhead. Who is this from? Which one does this refer
to? Mark, you'll have another attack.
One of them intercepted the mail this morning. He must have been watching for this very letter. Maybe the rest of the letter's in the fireplace. Eve,
Mark, wait a minute. I searched the ashes. This is all that was left.
Get Queen on the phone.
But, Mark, he won't come now after...
Get Queen!
Yes, Ellery? Mark Gallows.
Said he'd kept calling me all night, Nicky. What for?
He wouldn't tell me. Said he had to see you and right away.
Did you tell the great Mr. Gallows that Dad and I were out all night on another case?
Yes. You want me to call him?
No, Nicky. Anything interesting in the mail this morning?
I haven't finished.
Let's see. Bill, fan letter, special delivery.
Special delivery? I didn't notice it, Ellery.
From Mark Gallows.
From Gallows?
Well, apparently Mr. Gallows is in a tizzy. Let's see. Dear Mr. Queen, you've got to help me. One of my guests is an imposter.
What?
He used me, Nicky, to scare Das, Duff Brown, and Van Cleek into thinking one of them was an imposter to force a quick sale, and then, by gosh, he found out one of them really is.
Oh, serves him right.
Expose the imposter, protect the diamond till the sale goes through, and, Mr. Queen, I'll pay you 10% of the sales price as a fee.
Don't you dare turn him down. I need a raise.
It's this way. The diamond has been buried on my Riverdale estate for years.
Buried?
I enclose a copy of my original map showing the hiding place. If anything should happen to me...
Oh, darn it. I'll take it. Hello?
Nicky?
Oh, Inspector.
Let me talk to Ellery, will you?
Oh, yes, Ellery. It's for you, Inspector.
Dad? Oh, yes, Dad?
Your friend Mark Gallows.
Gallows? Yes, what's happened?
He's committed suicide.
Suicide?
Mark Gallows?
Hanged himself from a rafter in his barn.
Dad, keep everything the way you found it.
What do you mean?
I'm coming right up there.
For what? I tell you, Ellery committed...
Dad, sight unseen. He was murdered. Nicky, come on.
Well, son.
Murder.
But, Ellery...
I'm sorry, Dad. It's murder.
I don't know how you can say that, Ellery.
Neither do I. Man found hanging from a rafter. Not a clue to a second person.
Look at this rope he was hanged with.
What about it? The rope comes from this barn, Ellery.
It's filthy.
It's what?
He has phobia.
That's it, Nicky. Dad, Gallows suffered from a morbid fear of dirt. Now, there were two ropes in this barn. This dirty one here and that clean one hanging over there. Even approaching death, Gallows would have used the clean one if he was going to hang himself.
Huh?
Gallows was strung up, Dad, and almost certainly by one of those three diamond buyers.
The imposter.
Imposter? What imposter?
No doubt about it, Nicky.
No doubt about what?
Well, I'm afraid we're a little ahead of you on this one, Dad. Are Van Cleek, Das, and Duff Brown still here?
Yes.
You better hold them here for a while and keep them out of my way.
Why? What are you going to do?
Dad, you wouldn't believe me if I told you.
I give up. You men.
Yeah?
One of you watch the body. The rest of you come with me.
All right, Joe, you better stay here.
Ellery, what are you going to do?
Look, Mr. Gallows over. Turn around, Nicky.
Oh. What are you looking for?
Gallows sent me a copy of the map. Where would he keep the original? I'd say it's an even bet he carried it on him, Nicky.
In a secret pocket, you mean?
Yes. Or here.
What?
Leather pouch around his waist, next to the skin.
Is it in there?
No. It's empty.
His killer took the map.
Yes.
But how would the killer know?
About the map? Nicky, do you think you can stand a look at Gallows' face?
Well, it's awfully dead-looking.
And dirty. See here, Nicky.
Dirt around his mouth.
I think our diamond hunter tortured Gallows into telling his secret.
By putting dirt in his mouth. His phobia.
Really nasty, Nicky.
Why are you looking at the copy of the map, Ellery? Killer has the original. Must have dug up the diamond.
I know, Nicky, I know. Let's take a look anyway, shall we?
Why didn't he put the blasted bauble in a bank vault where it belongs?
I think this is exciting.
There is something gold buggish about it, Nicky. Well, let's see. I think this is it.
What's it?
This tree, Dad. It's our starting place. Here, look at Gallo's map.
Guess so. From this tree, you go due south.
And then due west, and X marks the spot. Wonderful.
Due south, due west. But how far? Just says 10 on the first leg and 10 on the second. 10 what? Miles?
Now, don't be sarcastic, Inspector. Not miles or feet or inches either, because then it wouldn't be far enough to cross that brook, and the south leg on the map does cross the brook.
Right, Nicky. Therefore, it must mean yards. Dad, let me have that compass and yardstick, will you?
Here. Yo, sir.
Which is this way.
1 yard, two, three.
Hey!
What, Inspector?
Look at this, Nicky.
A sort of trail in the grass.
Ellery, see this trail?
I saw it, Dad. I'm right on it.
Killer's been here before us.
Didn't I tell you, Ellery?
Got it. Come on, Nicky. Here, watch this rope.
Oh, gosh, I'm getting all wet. Buried treasure.
Here's the trail again.
And this is the end of the 10 yards, Dad.
But the trail keeps going, Ellery, in the same direction.
Uh-huh, another yard.
Killer went 11 yards due south. Yeah, and then he turned west.
Two, three, four.
And parallel your route.
A yard away, I don't understand. How far does the map say you've got to go west, Ellery?
Another 10 yards. 9, 10.
But the killer's trail keeps going, son. To here. Toss that yardstick over.
A catch.
Another yard. Exactly. Again, he went 11 yards instead of 10. Funny. Wait.
What is it, Dad?
Ellery, come here.
Nicky, stand on this spot, the end of the 10 yards west, so we don't lose it.
X marks the spot. Or does it?
What, Dad?
Look here.
Somebody dug here, then filled up the hole.
He found it, son. That map we've been following must be wrong.
Darn it. Sure it must be wrong. After all, he had the original.
Gallus must have deliberately falsified the figures on the map he sent you, Ellery.
I doubt it. Maybe the killer didn't find the diamond. Maybe he was wrong and we're right.
There's only one way to find out, son.
Uh-huh. Mickey, hand me that shovel.
When you strike water, Ellery, let me know.
No sign of anything yet, son.
Not yet, Dad. What? Wait. Here it is.
The diamond?
No, a metal box. Pretty well chewed up, too. Dad, give me a hand up.
Here, son.
Just a rusty old box.
No, I think it's so eaten away it'll give without much trouble.
It's diamond.
Holy smokes, son.
Is that real, Ellery?
It's real, Nicky.
So the killer knocked off old Gallus for nothing. Dug in the wrong place.
Yes. Well, now let's go back to the house and finish this off. And there you have our mystery for tonight. Nikki, would you please introduce our very lovely and charming guest armchair detective for our listeners?
Certainly, Ellery. Ladies and gentlemen, meet Miss Peggy Lee, the popular vocalist who has made Manana and her Capitol Records album, Rendezvous with Peggy Lee, both of which have set the public humming and dancing.
Welcome, Peggy, to the armchair. Say, you know, it's too bad that we don't have a little more time. Then we could hear you sing one of the songs from that Rendezvous with Peggy Lee album.
Which you did in cooperation with your husband, Dave Barber.
Well, Ellery, right now I'm too nervous to sing anything. I've never been a detective before, and this case tonight has me missing the downbeat, if you know what I mean.
I'm afraid you're just jesting, Peggy. Anyway, what about our case? Tell me, have you figured out who hanged Mark Gallows?
Well, I couldn't say exactly, I couldn't exactly name one person, but I think that Eve Angel had something to do with it because she knew all about his fear of dirt. And I think that she probably was the only one who could intercept the letter that was partly burned. And also that she was the only one who would know about the map. And he may have told her the wrong directions.
Throw her off?
Yeah, I think so. Uh-huh.
That's a very interesting deduction. And thank you very much, Peggy Lee. We'll find out in just a moment if your solution is correct.
I will not be held indefinitely. I'm a subject of His Majesty. Will you stop that weeping? You give me a headache.
Oh, but he was so kind to me.
Miss Angel, if you please.
Angel, what's this nonsense about murder, Inspector Queen?
Yes, the man hanged himself.
You said so yourself, sir.
Yes, I did, didn't I, Mr. Darris? You people all throw? All right, go ahead, son.
Unfortunately, Gallo's murderer made a mistake. Mr. Gallows sent me a copy of that map, and by following its directions exactly, I located the spot where he'd buried the Gallows diamond. Now, how did the killer miss it? Well, what were the directions? To go 10-something due south, and then 10-something due west. We assumed that the figure 10 referred to yards, as they did, since by going 10 yards south and then 10 yards west, we did find the diamond. Then the killer did not take the figure 10 to mean yards. Or he'd have found the right spot, too. He took it to mean a different unit of measurement. Nicky, exactly how far did the killer measure?
11 yards instead of 10, each way.
He reads the figure 10 and measures off 11 yards. Now, how can that be? Only if, in the kind of measure he was using, 10 units equal 11 yards. And which unit of measurement is that? The meter.
Meter?
That's right. Meters exceed yards in exactly the proportion of 11 to 10. But that gives us our criminal.
Oh, I do not see.
Van Cleek, you're not alone.
How does that give you your criminal, Mr. Queen?
It tells me, Mr. Das, that the killer of Gallows thinks in terms not of yards, but of meters. Could that be Miss Angel?
Me?
No, it couldn't. Miss Angel is an American, and we use yards, not meters.
So do we in Britain, Mr. Queen.
That's quite true, Mr. Duff Brown. And so do the Hindus, especially one as anglicized as Mr. Reginald Das.
Fortunately for me, sir.
But almost all of continental Europe uses the metric system, including, of course, the Dutch.
Ellery!
Stop it, Van Cleef! Stop it!
You have the advantage of me, Mynheer Inspector.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the solution to our mystery. Thank you, Peggy Lee, for serving as our guest armchair detective this evening. As mementos of the occasion, I have for you a copy of my latest mystery anthology, The Queen's Awards, 1947, and a subscription to Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine. And here's Mr. Masterson.
Panting, Mr. Q. About next week, I mean.
Suppose I give you a good reason to pant, Paul. Want to meet a movie star?
Are you kidding? Where? Where is she, Ellery?
Nikki.
Yes, Ellery?
Mind stepping over here, Miss Porter?
Me? What's the matter with you?
Paul, and ladies and gentlemen, I want you to meet Nikki Porter, starlet. This is Ellery Queen saying goodnight till next week.
All names used on this program are fictitious and do not refer to real people, either living or dead. Among the members of tonight's cast were Howard Culver, Herb Butterfield, Kay Brinker, Joan Banks, Bill Boucher, Wilms Herbert, Eric Snowden, and Sidney Miller. Music was by Rex Corey, direction by Dwight Houser. Entire production under the supervision of Ellery Queen.
There you have it, The Adventures of Ellery Queen, May 6, 1948, One Diamond, starring Sidney Smith. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a break here on the WGN Radio Theater. More after these words. Yes, consider it done,
oh,
Lisa.
Oh, it's done.
All right, well.
I'm on it.
We gave another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter away, thanks to Dan Jaffe, Dave Weiske from Cat's Pride Kitty Litter, our main sponsor here on the WGN Radio Theater. Do switch over to the Green Jug. You'll be doing yourself a favor and a favor of a lot of cats and dogs across the country. They are great humanitarians and wonderful sponsors of this show. So I do thank Dan and Dave. We have suspense coming your way in our next hour. After that, it's This Is Your FBI, starring Stacey Harris. We're going to play Cat's Pride Crack the Quote a couple more times. You can win some fun prizes. There's going to be some fun banter between Lisa and I.
Always.
Right?
I'm sure we'll be arguing about something at some point.
Oh, definitely. So banter. Stick around, folks.
Banter?
It's banter, yeah.
Banter.
Stick around, folks. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago. If you have a smart speaker, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Time for the news with Roger Badish.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All righty. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Esmeralda. It is 12:07 in the morning. It's a Monday morning, Lisa. Happy Monday to
happy
you.
Happy Monday.
And hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. I did not have a nap.
I can tell.
Do I have bags around my eyes?
No,
dark
you're just
circles?
A little cranky tonight.
I'm cranky.
Just a wee bit.
What do you mean I'm cranky?
Exactly.
Oh, you mean like that.
I can tell you.
Chris agrees, by the way.
Chris agrees.
Uh-huh. Hi, D-R-R. I got a bunch of comedians all around me.
I know. You need them.
But what would
we
you
need
do
to offset
somebody,
you.
Somebody has to be.
We have to offset his mood of the evening or
Listen,
of the morning.
I'm going to start doing stand-up at Zany's pretty soon.
I think I will come to see the show. Roger,
yeah.
We'll go to see him. If he does it, we will show
up. He can do the stand-up.
If we get a free ticket, we'll show up.
Listen,
free
the
ticket,
owner of Zany's is going to discover me. I'm telling you.
Okay.
Because I have...
Like a bad cold?
Right. He's going to discover me.
He's going to discover you?
Yeah.
Is it a he? I mean, I don't know.
She.
Who it is?
I mean, it could be a she. Absolutely. Going to discover me, and they're going to be like, all right, let's have
you. And all three of your jokes are going to be discovered.
They're going to give me
just take the three, and then we'll just keep like looping them. Just we'll
yeah,
just
like the drum,
jokes.
The snare's drum.
Listen, I have a lot of jokes. I have a lot of jokes.
You have a lot.
None of them are funny. I mean, I'm
what?
Sorry. What?
Roger,
they're all funny.
What? I didn't hear you.
They're all funny.
They're funny. They're all funny. Aren't they
Listen,
funny, Curtis?
Roger,
oh,
you know
hilarious.
He's funny. Let me just, I have some advice.
I'm laughing already.
You know, if I knew you when you were a kid, you know what advice I would have given you? I would have said, listen.
I would have given you? Given you.
I would have said, Roger, why don't you stash that stash?
Ooh, I like that. Okay, you had to have been
That's
there,
That's a good
I think.
One.
You had to have
That's
been
a
there.
Good, you yeah. can add that to your
you know,
joke
in,
list.
In all reality, how did you grow such a huge mustache?
It's called Mother Nature.
That thing
it
was
just
massive.
Grew?
It's like huge. It looks
there
like
there have been bigger ones.
It looks like a lead pipe ones. Coming out of your face.
A what? A lead pipe?
It was huge.
It was a sign of the times.
Do you remember Jerry Colonna?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
All right. His
How
mustache,
do you do?
That's yeah. it.
His mustache was much larger than mine.
He would.
Yeah.
He weren't you supposed mustache. To wrap it around a pencil or something?
It wasn't really a handlebar mustache. It was just like a gigantic.
Had a little,
it looked like
it
a broom.
Had a curl up to it on the edges.
It looked
was
like a broom.
A very full mustache.
Like a broom.
No, it had a curl up.
Yeah, if somebody would have grabbed your feet, they could have used you as a broom.
That was the hair. That was the hair back at the time.
So could you still grow it now?
And he looked like Jason.
If you wanted to.
I am
he looked
growing.
Like Jason Sudeikis
sure.
in that one picture.
If you wanted to.
I guess I could.
Did
sure.
you post the pictures? Because I want people to see how
what
much
pictures?
Roger looked like Jason Sudeikis.
Did I post
Sudeikis.
What pictures?
Those three pictures
the,
you showed
the
me of Roger.
That you had
no,
yesterday.
They're Roger's pictures.
Roger, can you post them?
He did
well,
post
on
them.
I did on my site.
Well, can we
oh,
somehow...
you want them on your site?
No,
merge
we don't,
them?
Roger.
Okay. All right, fine.
We don't.
I
want to
merge.
Just
that's
nod
between
your head.
You two.
All right. Well,
it must be a full moon, as as one
there,
of our listeners
is,
have just texted in.
Yeah,
I know.
It is.
All right, we're arguing already. I knew it would happen soon.
Hey, don't you have to like give something away?
Yeah,
yes,
we're going to play our game.
Okay.
In this hour, Suspense with Maureen O'Sullivan and Mae Whitty. She wasn't Dame Mae Whitty yet. She was Mae Whitty back then. We have Suspense in this hour. In our next hour, This Is Your FBI, but it's time now to play Cats, Pride, Crack, the Quote. What is the movie, Lisa?
Amadeus.
I just want to say something. I got the first one right today, right?
You did.
It's when I got all three right last
you did last night
show right
you did
so that means I'm gonna do my math here.
Okay, you've got four
That's
out of six
four
so far
I'm
gonna get you on the
four
third
in a
one.
Row
he's on a
four out of six
streak
Roger right.
Amadeus
you, know, you have yeah, Amadeus
oh I never saw this movie
oh darn
I have
all right so
okay,
the number to call 312-981-7200
they're already calling
give
in.
Us a call we'll take caller eight. And we're going to play the game live. What do they win?
They're going to win two tickets to see Company at the Mercury Theater Chicago.
All right. It's not Three's Company, is it?
It is definitely not.
All right.
It
Give us a call
Stephen
right
Sondheim
now.
Sondheim Company.
312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
It's time now
another
for
buck
Crack
to Roger.
The Quote.
Go, Roger.
Brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's being wired to your secret bank account in Switzerland.
Yeah, thank you. So secret,
it's
even
on,
I don't
the check
know
check is in the mail.
Very secret.
Hey, we have Mo on the line from Kansas. Hi, Mo.
Hi, how you doing, Lisa?
I'm great. Thanks for calling in. We're glad you can pick us up. Are you listening on through the internet or are you listening through the radio?
On the radio, I'm old school, old-fashioned old school guy.
That's All right. fantastic. We're glad you found us. We're going to play a little Crack the Quote. The movie is Amadeus, and you're okay. going to get a lot of help from Carl because he has not seen the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I've been All guessing. Right. I've okay. been guessing very.
But he's a good guesser.
Very well,
Roger's an excellent guesser. He's got a good track
I
record
haven't
as well.
One right in 4 or 5 weeks.
All right, here we go. Quote number one: Wolfgang taught me how original music comes from the soul. Quote number two, music is not what I do, it's who I am. Number three, Wolfgang would be frantic if he found those were missing. You see, they're all originals.
Hmm.
What do you think, Mo?
Well, you know, I'm going to be like Paul. I haven't seen the movie, but I'm going to take a shot in the dark at number two.
Number two.
Hmm. What do you think, Roger?
No, so, Carl, you're up next.
Oh, I'm up next?
You're up next.
It's number
I got to hear him again.
It's number three.
Number three. We've got a two and a three.
Oh, he's so sure.
Isn't he?
Yeah.
Roger, what do you think?
Well,
give him to me again real quick.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, just have to say one, two, or three.
What?
Just say one, two, or three.
I'm going to go with two.
Two. We've got two twos and a three. Let's hear it.
Wolfgang would be frantic if he found those were missing. You see, they're all originals.
I have to give this one to Carl.
What?
I knew Roger wouldn't get it, but Mo, I'm really surprised at you. No, I'm kidding. Yeah.
I know.
Mo, I'm 5 for 5.
But Mo...
I said I like to go with you, so anyway, you know, you're still my winner. You're still my guy.
Hey, let me say this, Mo. You're calling from out of town, so these tickets are not going to...
No. We're not going to give them... We've got it all worked out, Carl.
Oh, because we're going to give them some Twilight Zones, right?
I'm going to send him the Twilight
Zone. Yeah, we'll send you some Twilight Zones.
Carl, I got it all worked out.
Oh,
it's a 4-CD set. We're going to send them off to you. We know what to do. We know how this works, right, Mo? We got it all worked out.
Mo, I need you to come here help me out here. This Lisa, she's so mean to me all the time.
Carl's just a step behind, but we are on it. Curtis
Mo, I need
and
your
I
help, buddy.
It.
I need your help. Come to Chicago.
good looking out, Lisa. The best I can do, Carl, is wear a Chicago Bulls jersey with Michael Jordan.
All right. That's cool. I like that.
We'll
Very
always
good, buddy.
Love Michael Jordan. Thanks for calling in.
Thank
we're going to
you.
Send you that Twilight Zone CD set. Take care.
All right. It is time for suspense. And make sure you text into us, folks. We love getting your texts. We read all the texts. 312-981-7200. Anything you want to text us, we love hearing from you. But right now, it is a tale well calculated to keep us in suspense. This is The Black Shawl, and it stars Mae Whitty and Maureen O'Sullivan from July 27, 1944, part one now of Suspense.
Roma Wines presents Suspense. California for enjoyment throughout the world.
Salud.
Your health, senor. Roma wines toast the world. The wine for your table is Roma wine, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
This is the man in black, here for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California, to introduce this weekly half hour of Suspense. Tonight from Hollywood, Roma Wines bring you as stars Dame Mae Whitty and Miss Maureen O'Sullivan. And so with the performances of these two distinguished leading ladies in the play called The Black Shawl, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
Listen to me, please. Listen carefully and tell me if I'm right. I say I'm about to be murdered. I'm not certain. No one's even threatened me. But I say I am going to be murdered. This is just a plain, ordinary-looking kitchen that I'm sitting in. But for me, I know it is a death house. If it were only 3 days ago and I could live them all over again. Or if it only were... Fair was being held in town, and everyone was gay. And Robert was late as usual, but I didn't care.
Susan, not waiting for Rob again, are you?
Have you ever seen me when I haven't been?
And him, a lawyer for the watch factory. Somebody ought to teach him how to tell time.
Hey, how about a dance, Sue? One short before that boyfriend of yours comes around to steal you away.
Oh, thanks, George, but I'd rather wait. If he's not quick about it, he'll find nothing left to steal except the bench.
All right. But let me know if you're interested in a change of...
Hello there.
Oh, hello.
I've been watching you sitting there.
and I wondered whom you were waiting for.
Oh, just a friend.
I see. I don't wish to seem inquisitive. Please don't misunderstand. It's only that your face struck me as being unusually bright and alive, as well as being uncommonly pretty. Oh,
thank you.
Now, you see, I have an eye for faces. My son was a sculptor. He worked almost entirely with heads, and my job was choosing them. It's all very foolish, I'll admit. More so since he departed some time ago.
Oh, I am sorry.
Thank you. That's precisely why I was watching you. Of course, I know nothing about you any more than you do of me. But, by the way, what's your name?
Susan Appleby.
Mine is Elizabeth Masters.
How do you do?
I live just the other side of town.
Oh.
Let me come to the point, Susan. I admire your looks and I like the way you act and speak.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a young woman and I'm lonely. I have been ever since I lost my son. I need a companion, someone who can stay with me and help me too. And you resemble closely my very first companion, my best remembered one.
Oh, but
I'll pay you well. £30 a month. Your chief occupation will be to brew me some tea and talk to me. Are you interested?
Well, I have been seeking that sort of a position, but I...
Splendid! You need look no longer.
But you know nothing about me.
I know that I like you, and that I want you to accept my offer. I'll return here at the same time tomorrow evening. If you do want the position, please be here. And believe me, I hope you are here. Good night, Susan.
Good night.
See you tomorrow at 8.
All right. I'll be here.
What do you mean you'll be here?
Oh, Rob, you frighten me.
Well, you were whistling our tune, so I thought you were expecting me. What do you think you're doing, making dates with strange women? Believe me, she is a strange woman.
Mrs. Masters? Oh, no, she's nice. And, Rob, she offered me a position.
And doing what?
As a companion. Just what I wanted and at £30 a month, darling.
No small sum, that. Too bad you can't manage it.
But I'm thinking seriously of it, Bob.
Well, stop then. I don't want you ever to have one serious thought about anything.
Now, Rob, I'm going to take it.
What do you know about the old hen?
Nothing yet.
Sue, did you look at the way she dressed?
Hmm?
Black from shoes to shawl. Why, the shawl's so large and black you'd hardly know she had a face.
She seemed charming.
Oh, she might well be, but I'm not so bad myself.
Oh.
And I want you for a companion, too. Let's push the wedding date ahead, darling. Make it any time you will.
Oh, now, we've gone through this so many times, and you know it can't be done. But with the way you're coming along, and with £30 a month additional, why, Rob, in no time at all, we'll have all we need.
You're an awfully stubborn fellow, darling.
Oh, you know I'm right.
How many evenings off would she allow you?
We didn't get that far.
Well, where's the place at, then?
Well, isn't that strange? She left so quickly, I never had a chance to ask.
Call it off, Sue.
Well, why, Rob?
Well, I don't like it. You know nothing about her, not even where she lives.
Well, I told you I hardly spoke to her. Tomorrow I'll know everything.
All right, my darling, you win.
Oh.
But let me hear from you as soon as you set there.
Well, of course I will. Why, everything's going to be fine.
Ah, I'm silly. Sure it will. Hello, darling.
Hello, Rob.
Everything will be fine for us.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you as stars Dame Mae Whitty and Maureen O'Sullivan, whom you have heard in the prologue to The Black Shawl by R.R. Lewis. Tonight's study in Suspense. And now it is with pleasure that we bring back to our soundstage Maureen O'Sullivan as Susan and Dame Mae Whitty as Mrs. Masters. In The Black Shawl, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
And so, I was there waiting, as Mrs. Masters had instructed me, the following night. We got into her car and she drove us off. It only seemed a mile or two from town, but we twisted and turned so many times that in the dark I became completely confused as to my whereabouts. Then finally, we stopped.
There it is, straight ahead down the path. Miss Appleby, welcome to Master's Hall. I'm in the parlor, Miss Appleby. Won't you join me in a cup of tea?
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Masters. I'd be very grateful if I might. I love my room.
Good. Mm. Sit down over there opposite me, won't you?
I certainly will. The fire's as inviting as the tea.
I've always had one burning whenever I'm home. I get cold so easily.
Oh.
That's why I always wear this shawl around me. Sugar?
Thank you. No lemon or milk, thanks.
Now, Susan, tell me about yourself. Everything. All you've done. All you see in the future for you.
Oh, there's very little to tell. I've always lived here in town. I expect I always shall remain here.
After your marriage, you mean? I presume you've such intentions.
I expect so.
It is the only thing that matters, isn't it? Having someone to care for.
Yes.
I know. Before my son left me, I desired nothing. The scope of his talent was the world we lived in, and beautiful it was. I suppose love is like talent in that respect. It, too, creates a smaller world within the large one we inhabit and makes you want it never to disappear.
Did his talents receive recognition?
To a limited degree. Everyone saw in his work the promise of a truly great sculptor. The promise never bore fruit because he hadn't enough time. Winter came far too early in his life.
How old was he?
I lost him before he was 21.
Oh, Mrs. Masters, that's terrible. So great a waste.
That's it. You'll realize it too. The waste. To lose a useless thing, that can be forgiven. Or if the loss can't be helped, there's nothing we can say but to cast away genius. To kill it before it's reached its full expression. That no one can forgive. No one can forget.
Oh, now, now, please, Mrs. Masters. We have no control over such matters. They're God's will.
Of course. Thank you, dear. You're very sweet. I wish you more success in the world of your love. I'm sure you'll have more.
Oh, that's kind of you.
Another good man ruined.
I should be insulted.
Ruined by a woman.
Oh.
That's it. Smile, laugh. Life can be so short. Remember, my boy, enjoy life while you may.
Well, that first night, and did not awaken until almost nine. When I realized how late it was, I dressed quickly and ran downstairs. Mrs. Masters had left a note on the kitchen table, telling me she'd gone shopping, and I was to take my breakfast and then wait for her. I looked around to see if I might do something, but everything was in perfect order. I looked for a phone, thinking I'd call Rob, but I could find none in the kitchen or the center hall. Finally, I thought I'd take a look at the outside, get a bit of fresh air. I went to the front door and tried it. It was locked. I turned the bolt and pulled. The door was still locked. I couldn't understand. Then suddenly I realized the door was locked from the outside. I ran to the kitchen, not afraid, but surprised. Then something struck me that I hadn't noticed before. All the kitchen windows were barred. I made a quick dash for the kitchen door.
Why, Susan. Good morning. Did you have a good night's rest?
Oh, yes, I did, thank you.
Fine. But you're trembling. Is there a chill in the house? You really should stay away from the doors.
Oh, I know, but I wanted a breath of air. The front door was locked.
Was it?
Yes.
Oh, I must have done it automatically. You see, I've lived alone for so long, and it's natural for a person who lives alone to lock all doors behind them when they go out. Oh.
Why are the windows barred?
Oh, that goes back to the time my son did his work here. We had so much of it lying carelessly about all over the house. So much of value. Anyone might easily have climbed through the windows.
Oh, of course. Oh, it's silly of me. For a moment, though, I felt so much like a prisoner behind those bars.
An unusual experience for you, I take it.
A very unusual one.
Now you're smiling again. That's fine. My boy always liked to see a smile on a woman's face. Without one, he always said they reminded him of death. Yes. Death.
All right. right, Lisa, that's the first portion of Suspense from July 27th, 1944, with the Black Shawl with Mae Whitty and Maureen O'Sullivan. We'll get back to that in just a few minutes. Time for the news here on WGN at 12:30 with Roger Badish. Oh, you know what? Before that, we have a break. These spots first.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. Am I Carl Amari or are you Carl Amari?
Oh, you be Carl. I don't want to be Carl.
Why not? It's not so bad.
I'd rather be me.
Watch this. Ready? Hey, yeah. Chris. You like that?
Oh, yeah.
Chris isn't
now,
hearing that
sounded
right
like
now.
Chris.
Please leave a message
after yesterday,
the beep.
I said, Curtis.
You said Curtis.
I said Curtis.
Do I have
Chris.
To pull back the tape?
Curtis? No, you don't.
No,
it's
no.
Chris.
Now, you know what? I was hearing that in my nightmares last night.
Good.
Good,
it
exactly.
Made the fillings, if I had any fillings in my teeth, fall out.
Do you have
I don't
any?
Have any, no. But if I had fillings in my teeth, they would have fell out.
They would have fell?
That's how many times I heard
or
that.
Or fallen.
Fallen.
One or the other.
I have fallen and I can't get up.
Get up. I knew that was coming.
All right. Well, we're listening to a really good episode of Suspense, but first Lisa has to read a quick...
It is allergy season. Dr.
Achoo!
Kevin... Yep. Dr. Kevin Most has the scoop on what you can do to minimize your symptoms. Tune in to the Steve Cochran Show on Monday at 6:40 a.m.
All right, Lisa. Are you ready for the conclusion to Suspense? This
you
is
bet.
Called... The Black Shawl. Let's go back to July 27th, 1944 for the conclusion to Suspense.
Next day, I wrote to Rob. Please come to see me now, Rob, if you can. Everything's all right. Don't worry about me, but come to me. It's unbelievable, but I must tell you that I still don't know the address here. I cannot tell you how to find it. But someone must know Mrs. Masters and can tell you where she lives. I want to send this off to you now, so I'll close. I can't tell you, darling, how great is my need to see you and my love for you, Sue. Mrs. Masters?
Why, yes, Susan, what is it?
Where can I post a letter?
Let me have whatever you want sent, and I'll drop it in the box when I go shopping tomorrow.
Oh, I don't want to bother you. I'll take it down myself.
No bother at all. There's nowhere else to post a letter, and I pass the box every day.
Oh, but I'd much
it's
rather...
It's settled. Let me have it. It'll be sent early tomorrow.
Oh, of course. Here you are.
Thank you. And Susan, I dropped my shawl. Would you mind?
Oh, not at all.
Exquisite, isn't it? Will you join me in a cup of tea?
No, thank you. Mrs. Masters, this morning I said I was silly for feeling like a prisoner in your home, but... The feeling is still there.
What have I done or said that might create any such impression?
That's not the question I'm trying to answer. I just feel it. The answer I don't know is, what do you want with me? Oh, what was that?
Wait right here. I'll be down shortly.
Where are you going?
Upstairs. But you wait down here. Do you understand?
Oh. No. No, I won't stay down here. I'm frightened. I'm coming up, too.
No, dear. Don't worry about the bus. It hasn't broken at all. No, there's not a scratch on it. Dear, dear, please don't cry. Susan, I told you to stay downstairs. What'd you come up for? All right. You know now. Miss Appleby, this is John Masters, my son.
That night at dinner, there were three of us. I couldn't bear to look at him. The twisted face, the dull, glazed eyes, whimpering, grunting, unable even to speak a single intelligible word. And when I saw the two together, she with the horrible black shawl draped around her, I knew for certain that in her own way she was as mad as her son. And I knew more surely than ever how great was my own danger. Late that night, I packed my bag silently and swiftly, and I waited. It was well past midnight before I dared open my door and look out. The house was completely dark, upstairs and down. I felt my way along and started down the stairs. I reached the bottom and went right to the front door first.
Susan!
Oh.
Susan, where were you going?
You couldn't possibly know your way about once outside the house. You'd surely have lost your way. Wouldn't she, John?
Stop it! Stop it!
All right. John, leave us now. John, dear, did you hear me?
Miss Masters, you have no right to keep me here if I don't wish to stay. Well, when I accepted this position, I was of the opinion that you lived alone. Conditions have changed, and now I wish to leave.
Oh, please, Susan, believe me, I don't blame you a bit. But think of me, just for a single moment. Why do you think I asked you here? Do you believe it's so easy for me, chained to this lost thing? No one to talk to, day or night. I needed someone. I need you now.
But you told me he was dead.
I never told you that. Only that he'd left me. And so he has.
Oh, no. No, I won't stay. I'll go mad if I do.
Very well, dear. It's no use trying to argue with you. But stay at least until tomorrow. You could never find your way tonight, and if you stay over, it'll give me a chance to find someone in town.
I'd rather go now, if you don't mind.
Tomorrow night. Just until then. Even if I've no one, well, you can leave after dinner tomorrow. I'll pay you 2 weeks' wages if you do. Please, you can't refuse me that.
Well, I...
Thank you. Thank you, dear Susan.
I shouldn't have stayed. I knew that from the moment I agreed. I slept badly, waking from time to time, certain that I heard odd noises from the next room. Low chuckles, whispered, voiceless mutterings. But the night passed finally, and today was uneventful. When Mrs. Masters returned from shopping in the village, she informed me that my successor would arrive tomorrow morning, and I was therefore free to leave immediately after dinner. She spent the rest of today preparing the evening meal. It was as though it were a special holiday, so great were the pains she took. The dinner turned out to be wonderful. Mrs. Masters was extremely gracious.
Dear Susan, we drink to you, my dear, dear Susan. To your future, to your man. To your future with your man.
Oh, thank you.
And may you remember this evening all the rest of your days.
You're very
All
nice.
The rest of your days.
Thank you.
Not at all, my dear. Let me pour you out some more wine. And some for you, John.
I'm really sorry that I must hurt you by leaving you this way.
You? Hurt me? Why, my dear, if anyone has been hurt, surely it's you. We frightened you so, made you so miserable. You're the hurt one, Susan, dear. Not I.
Anything I've felt or said is forgotten now. Always when I think of you, I shall remember this evening.
I'm certain of it. And so you may remember better, my dear. Let me imprint the occasion still more clearly upon your mind. Do you know what happening it is we celebrate?
I expected it was my leaving.
So it is. But did it seem likely that you alone would cause so much excitement in our home?
Well, I...
Miss Appleby, this is the third anniversary of the most important event in the history of Master's Hall. We honor you by asking you to partake of our joy.
And I thank you for it.
No need of that. You need only listen and be silent. 3 years ago, my son was a genius. Today, he is my son. 3 years ago, the world's door stood wide before us. Today, all the shoulders on earth couldn't break it down. It was shut upon us 3 years ago tonight. She slammed it as she left. My son loved her dearly. My first sweet companion. I warned him. I told him that no woman would put up with his temperament. He wouldn't listen. He loved her madly. Madly. The perfect word for it. And for that, she slammed the door on him. Slammed it in his face, his heart, his head. That night he lost the power of his mind. Ever since we waited in vain for its return... But we've honored the occasion. Don't think we've forgotten. Eh, John? 2 years ago this evening, on the first anniversary, Sally Thwaite left us. We told her the story. She was overwhelmed. She couldn't bear to stay and left quite suddenly. Last year, Catherine it was. Kitty, can't recall her last name at the moment. She wanted to leave us too. How could we refuse?
And now, tonight, Susan Appleby. Tonight, Susan, you are leaving us. Where are you going, Susan?
To the kitchen. Excuse me, please. I'm going to be murdered. I can't know for sure. But the way they laugh, the way they look, the way she sits there fingering that ugly, torn black shawl, the shawl that looks like death. What can I think? What can I do?
Susan, there's one thing more. The shawl, so beautiful, so exquisitely wrought. You must surely have noticed that I wear it all the time. It belonged to her, a gift from my son. In her haste, it slipped from her shoulders as she left. So this is all that remains of that lovely, wonderful creature. I should like you to wear it, if only for a moment. You're so much like her, and her memory is John's greatest comfort.
Oh, no. No, don't come near me. Don't touch me.
Please, just around your shoulders.
I won't wear it. Stay away from me. Please don't.
Ardon. Who would be coming here now? John, watch her closely. I look through the window. I don't know who he is, but he must surely have seen the light in the kitchen. I'll just send him away. I'll only be a moment. Watch her, John. If she shouts for him, well, you mustn't allow that, must you, John? So you'd better be still, Susan. Yes? What is it you want?
I beg your pardon. I'm looking for a Miss Susan Appleby.
You won't find her here, I'm sorry.
Well, are you certain of that? It seems to me I recognize that shawl. It was worn by the woman Miss Appleby went to work for night before last.
Surely this is not the only black shawl in the world. Nor am I the only woman who wears one.
And I've been inquiring in the village, and all the shopkeepers remembered you as the woman who always does. So I followed you here this morning. Then I returned to the village, and now I'm back again.
Well, you can return right to the village. If you must know, Miss Susan Appleby was here. But she was entirely unsatisfied. She's probably found at home now.
Well, all right. If she's gone home, I'll see her there. I'm so sorry for your trouble.
Not at all.
Thank you. Good day.
Good day. Susan. Susan, was that you whistling a moment ago? I thought I told you to be still.
Oh, I was nervous. It's a habit of mine.
A very bad one, of which you've many. Among them, no doubt, is that of driving men mad. That one just now. The love in his eyes for you. I've seen that before. In other eyes. I'm so terribly sorry he's gone away. Perhaps he'll return another time.
Stay away from me.
Here now. The shawl's around. Draw it tighter down. Tighter.
No, please. Let me go.
You heard her. Let her go. Adams, get him.
Yes, sir.
Draw it quickly, John. Quickly.
No!
You killed him. John!
Susan, darling.
Oh, Rob, you heard me then?
Of course. This morning I went down to the local constabulary and persuaded Adams here to join me.
I was interested, ma'am, because there had been two disappearances in as many years. And just about this time. This sounded like a third.
It almost ended like the others, too.
Almost, but... Absolutely. He's locked the door. Let's have a hand here. We'll break it down.
All right, go. Watch out. Once we're in, she's mad and may try anything.
Right.
Let's go now. One, two three. All right, now. Well, look at that. The chandelier. Let's cut her down quickly.
It's too late. Her neck's gone.
Rob. The shawl. The black shawl.
And And so closes The Black Shawl, starring Dame Mae Whitty and Maureen O'Sullivan. Tonight's tale of suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by William Spear.
To every woman listening tonight, I want to say a special word about making every dinner or supper you serve taste better. I want to urge you to start serving Roma wine with your meals. It's simple, the cost is very, very little, and it works magic in making food more enjoyable. You can serve Roma wine with any meal or any time in any kind of glass you wish. Serve it chilled. Try different kinds of Roma wine until you find those you enjoy most of all. Try hearty red Roma California Burgundy or the delicately delicious Roma California Sauterne. The cost is mere pennies a glass, but you'll find even a pickup supper tastes like a banquet. Get Roma wines today. If your dealer is temporarily out of them, please try again soon. Just ask for R-O-M-A, Roma Wines, America's largest selling wines. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
Dame Mae Whitty appeared through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and is currently being seen in the White Cliffs of Dover. Next Thursday, same time, Donald Crisp and John Loder will be our stars in another unusual study in mystery, suspicion, and dangerous adventure. At that time, you'll hear the only ghost story ever to have been staged by Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wines. R-O-M-A. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
That is Suspense from July 27, 1944, with The Black Shawl, with Mae Whitty and Maureen O'Sullivan. A great episode of Suspense is heard on CBS. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right. Hey, Curtis.
Yes.
I have a question for you.
What's up?
So you downloaded our app. Now, I spent lots of hard-earned money and time creating this app for our listeners. It's
yes.
a free app for our listeners. And it has 10 classic radio shows on it. And we have a banner at our website at WGN Radio Theater. And when you go to that banner, you can just click the Google Store if you want to get it from the Google Store. Mm-hmm. Or you can click the Apple Store, right?
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm.
100% so right. I asked you to do that, and I know you did because you are awesome.
Well, you didn't have to tell me that twice.
Yeah.
But I don't care
if they call you Chris or Curtis. I call you Curtis. Lisa sometimes calls you Chris. I always call you Curtis. Sometimes I don't roll the R as much as I should. But here's what I want to know. Did you have a chance to download it? What did you think?
I downloaded it yesterday, Carl, when we were here.
Okay.
And, you know, Chris was telling me how smooth the app was running and everything like that. And I decided, you know what? I'll just do it and see what happens. And obviously, you've been promoting it a lot. And the listeners out there, too, if you don't know about the app, it's easy to access and download. Carl wants you to only get it from his website, though. So you have to go to Carl's website. What's the website again, Carl?
Yeah, WGNRadioTheater.com. It's the easiest way to get it because there's all kinds of apps in the Google and Apple store.
There are, yes.
You know, so here's a direct way you click, and it takes you right to the exact app.
Yeah, and you have to create an account. So then you create your account, just a username or your email, and then a password that you create. And then you can log in and you can get all the different radio programs that you want on there. And I think you said there's 10 free ones.
Yeah.
Is that right?
10 free ones.
So a bunch of really cool episodes to go ahead and check out and listen to. Some which I believe I've heard here on our airwaves,
yeah.
too.
Oh, yeah, 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 definitely.
So if you miss it,
you downloaded it.
Yeah,
now you have it at all times. Anytime you are
missing
wanting
us.
To...
When you're missing us, yeah. you have a way to connect back
yeah,
to
the
us.
The only thing that you don't have on the app, Carl,
mm-hmm.
Is my picture.
Mm.
That's the only thing you have to really...
Gosh, let me make a note of that. Hang on a second. Hang on. 1 second. Let me make a note of that. 1 second.
All and
right.
also...
Right, I just made a note. Hang on.
Perfect.
All right, there we go.
Nice.
I filed it.
I'm deleting the app now.
I filed
exactly.
it.
Exactly. It's nice to be appreciated,
I
isn't
know, right?
it? Yeah.
I'm going to pull up the Chris tape
Thank
again.
You. Thank you very much for downloading it, Curtis.
Chris says thank you.
All right, in our next hour, we're going to tune into This Is Your FBI from October 17th, 1947. Good, like a true kind of crime series that was in cooperation with the FBI. And at this time, Comey was not the head of the FBI. It was J. Edgar Hoover was the head of the FBI at this point, Lisa. Did you ever see that movie, J. Edgar, with that Clint Eastwood directed with Leonardo DiCaprio?
I didn't see it, but I know it was a great movie.
Man, I'll tell you what. The realism and how, you know, the time, you know, the era, it was just incredible. So if you haven't seen that movie, you should watch it.
I watched a movie today. That's my quote
for
the day.
Yeah, that's right. You saw A Quiet Place.
I did.
So when Nick DiGilio gets in here in a little while, you can tell him what you thought of it.
I will.
Because he really liked that movie.
I know.
All right, well, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Ah, that's soothing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That piano music.
Are you feeling a little sleepy?
Actually, you see how this camera, or not camera, this monitor is in the way. I can't see Curtis.
Thank God.
You know what this reminded me?
That's what all the producers say.
You know what this reminded me of? Does this remind you of anything from our...
Yes.
Being at a different
yes.
radio station?
That's why I said that's what all the producers say, because
this is
we
a true story,
issue.
Folks. This is a true story.
This is true.
This is an absolute true story.
You couldn't say what station you were at, could we?
That's all right.
All right. Well, it's another Chicago station.
We were at another radio station, and my producer, we had him for years.
Yeah,
this producer who will be named nameless.
Yes, he will.
It was a male. Hang on. Will remain nameless.
Right.
Was it
Chris?
It wasn't Chris. I'll give him that.
Listen to this. So he was our producer, and I never really got along with him that well.
I noticed that.
And you didn't really get along with him
either. I
just
didn't really talk to him one way or the other. We really just didn't.
He wasn't a friendly person.
No,
let's just say
I
that.
Just didn't. I would say hello and goodbye.
I will say this.
That was it.
I will say this. Excellent producer. He was an excellent producer.
If you can be unfriendly and be an excellent producer, it depends
My point is, he was an excellent producer. Just not friendly.
Technically.
And apparently, he did. He really didn't like me. I didn't know this.
It's true. I was
because I just assume everybody likes me.
Right. I like you.
I'm a nice
most
person.
Most of the time.
I'm nice to everybody.
Mm-hmm. That's
right.
That's what you think, anyway.
Right, Curtis?
Yeah, sure.
Right, Chris? Right, Chris? So anyway, I never did anything to make him not like me.
Well, we keep thinking what we may have said or not said.
I don't know. Well,
anything's
anyway,
possible.
So this is a true story. So he started producing the show from like another part of the building.
Like down the hall.
And it's important to see your producer, you know, you'd be able to give him hand signals and do stuff.
One day we get there and he says, I'm going to be producing the show out of this studio from now on, which is like
down the
hall.
We can't see him anymore.
Down the hall.
And we did that for the longest time. And then one day, I guess you were curious and you said,
somebody told me that producer told him that the reason he moved is because he couldn't stand looking at you anymore.
Are you serious?
I swear to you, that's
the story.
He
couldn't stand looking at me anymore.
And I said, get out of here.
It gave me kind of a complex.
Yeah, I know.
I have a little bit of a complex.
Like, why?
I mean,
you're not a bad-looking guy or anything.
I mean, I brush my hair. I brush my teeth. I use mouthwash. Why didn't he want to look at me anymore?
Curtis, maybe you're the best person to answer that. I mean, you're in the same position as this nameless guy.
See, I don't mind
he
looking
was a young
at
guy.
Carl. I don't mind looking at Carl.
Right.
What do you mind?
You just don't want to hang with me, right?
What do you mind?
We'll be here for another program.
All right. Well, we don't have time
I'm
to
hang
I'm kidding,
with
Carl.
You.
I know, but it was crazy. I mean, he didn't want it moved down the hall because he didn't want to look at me anymore.
That was shocking. It's
like that guy that gave me the double
birds. You had words with him once.
Remember the guy gave me the double
didn't
birds?
Didn't you have an issue with him once and you called him in and you said, why don't you like me or something
no, I
like
didn't
that?
Say that?
Something like
remember
that.
Remember that guy gave me the double birds in the window? That,
you're
that
still
gave
talking
me a complex
about that.
Too. In this hour, this is your FBI. starring Stacey Harris. But first, we're going to play Cat's Pride. Crack the quote. What's the movie?
The movie is The Sting.
The Sting. It's The Sting? Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah. Well, okay, so you're 5 for 6 this weekend, so my goal.
Well, I'm 5 for 5.
5 for 5.
Yeah. So I'm going for 6 for 6 here.
That's a good name for
Could
a group.
Could I actually get all 6? Wouldn't that be amazing?
It'd be amazing, but I have faith in our listeners to put you into to break that 5.
Why does everybody want me to fail?
Isn't 5 for 5 the name of a
group? Everybody wants me to fail.
I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Well, give us a call, 312-981-7200. The movie's The Sting, 312-981-7200. What
and
do they win?
They're going to win 2 tickets to see Company, which is playing right now at the Mercury Theater Chicago. So make sure that you can make it to a Mercury Theater Chicago theater.
All right, call right now. Be the 5th caller, and we will play the game live on the air right after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
We have Rick on the line. Hi, Rick.
Hey, I'm the guy that texted in, hope Carl gets 6 for 6.
Aw, oh, thanks, Rick.
Well, but I don't see many movies, and you're the one that said, well, you ought to call him in place.
Oh, I did say that.
Thank you very much.
I'm so glad you called. I'm glad you made it through, and we'll see how we do here. There's only 3 choices. So, you know what? You can always be like Roger and just say number 1. You know what I mean? Because that's what he does. He usually gets it wrong, but at least he gives it the old college try. So here we go. We're going to do it. The movie is The Sting. I'll give you the 3 quotes, and we'll see if we can give Carl a 6 out of 6. Maybe you can help him out, Rick, okay?
Well, I've never seen that movie, although I've heard of it, but I will try.
All right. Sometimes you just get a hunch. All right. Number 1, did you go stupid counting your money? Number 2, are you nuts carrying around a wad like that in a neighborhood like this? Number 3, stack your money and act broke. What do you think?
I'll go with number 2.
Number 2, are you nuts carrying a wad around like that in a neighborhood like this?
Well, I'm going to go for broke here. It's either 5 for 6 or 6 for 6.
What are you guessing?
Number 1.
Did you go stupid counting your money? Okay, Curtis.
Are you nuts carrying a wad around like that in a neighborhood like this?
You are absolutely right, Rick. You got it right. And Carl should have listened to you because you knew the right answer. Carl, I'm so sorry to break
your
streak.
Yeah, you seem like you're really sorry.
I'm so sad for you, but I'm more happy for Rick because Rick
kicked butt. He got it right.
Rick not only kicked butt, Rick won 2 tickets to see Stephen Sondheim's musical Company. It's playing right now at the Mercury Theater Chicago. It's in their new Venus Cabaret stage. I saw the show. I love the show.
Wrong.
This is mercurytheaterchicago.com.
I might get a job as a singer too in one of these Broadway.
When you go to Zany's and you get discovered, you can sing too.
Somebody's going to discover me one of these days.
Rick, do you love the theater?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
great.
I've gone occasionally, and years ago when I was little, we went with my parents a few times to Drury Lane in Evergreen Park.
Right.
I mean, that was like decades ago.
Drury Lane was in Evergreen, or was it? Right now
it's in Oak Brook.
Yeah. Did they move? Were they in?
I don't know.
Yeah.
They had a Drury Lane in Evergreen.
Oh,
I've only
I didn't
heard
know
about
that.
The Oak Brook one recent years. I think they had 2.
Mm.
And they recently, like within the last few years, tore down the Evergreen Park one.
Right.
And built a big shopping center right 95th and Western there.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. All right. Well,
thank you. I'm so glad you called in. I'm glad you won, and I'm glad you got it right. So
yeah,
thank you.
I tried your hunch idea. I guess that worked.
It works.
It sounded like something that somebody might say in maybe that kind of movie.
Exactly.
Something.
Great job. All right, my friend.
Take care,
Big
Rick.
Winner. And you know what, Lisa? 5 for 6 is not bad.
No.
I would take that at the track.
Right. I'm just,
I don't
know,
go to the racetrack.
But if you did, you'd take 5 for 6.
If I got 5 out of 6.
You'd be making millions if that was your batting average.
Man, you know what? If I could get 5 hits for every 6 at-bats, can you imagine how much the Cubs would pay me to play for them?
You'd be the highest paid player in baseball.
The Bayer in Blaze
Ball. The Bayer in Blaze Ball, yeah.
You know, that would be my dream. That would literally be my dream come
Your
true.
Your dream is to play
Absolute.
Baseball.
My dream would be to play for the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you got to get...
I don't
think it's
going
to happen.
You need
to be about 30 years younger.
I'm 54. I don't think it's going to happen.
But hey, you never know.
But, you know.
You keep working at your
It's
dream.
Possible.
You keep working
it's
at
possible.
It.
Hey, it's possible.
Hey, we dreamed about being
likely.
On WGN, and here we are.
All right. Well, it's time for This Is Your FBI.
Touché.
These were true crime stories. They were fact-based and dramatizations through the closed FBI files. You know, they would go into the FBI, and they would, and J. Edgar Hoover would say, all right, you can use any of those cases. They're all closed. So they'd take them and dramatize them on the air. Stacey Harris was the star. He played Agent Jim Taylor in every episode. Sort of like Dragnet, you know. Yeah. Jack Webb was Sergeant Joe Friday. This is called The Friendly Frame-Up from October 17th, 1947, Part 1. Now of This Is Your FBI.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This Is Your FBI. This Is Your FBI, the official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Presented as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. At this exact moment, your home is one of many millions in which this radio program is tuned in. In the Equitable Life Assurance Society, we feel that this nationwide home listening carries with it a very serious responsibility. Our Equitable radio message must be keyed to home and family problems. Tonight's Equitable Society message is on education. If there are children in your home, you'll be particularly interested in this commercial about the Equitable Education Fund. Don't miss it in about 14 minutes. Tonight's FBI file, The Friendly Frame-Up.
It is a truism in law enforcement circles that no criminal is easy to catch. Each one presents a new problem, demanding a new approach. Some, of course, are easier to apprehend than others. It is simpler to bring to justice the criminal who lives by crime alone, who earns no honest dollar, than it is to trap the species of lawbreakers among us, who live a Jekyll and Hyde existence, who operate a legitimate business as a front and a criminal business undercover. Those people are difficult to weed out because, for the most part, they take no active role in the commission of any crime. Mainly, they are the brains and the money behind the operation of a complex criminal machine. A machine which is built to stop at nothing. The night's file opens in a smoke-filled gymnasium. 20 fighters are going through their training workouts. One shadow boxing, one working with a sparring partner in the ring, another punching the heavy bag. It's 11 o'clock in the morning as Pete Webb, who manages these fighters, walks through the gym to his office.
Work, Lefty. Keep going.
Okay.
Nice footwork, Jackie. See me later, will you?
Right. Hey, Mr. Webb.
Hi, Buffalo. No time for you now, kid. Catch me in an hour, huh?
Okay.
Louie.
Right with you.
Louie.
Call back later, will you? Yeah. Uh-huh. Goodbye. Good morning, boss.
Who was that?
Bob Hudson.
What do you want?
The job.
Are you kidding? Some things just because I managed him, when he was fighting, I should support him for the rest of his life. Let him drop dead. What's coming this morning?
Little Danny's in the jug.
Where'd you get that?
Yancey was in. He just visited Danny, got the whole story.
What happened?
Well, Danny said he met a guy on a train coming east.
What kind of a guy?
A bond salesman. Danny got him loaded, and the guy spilled that he was carrying some bonds.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's perfect for Danny. He's always got those go-to-sleep pills in his kick. So he slipped some in the guy's drink and clipped his briefcase.
Well, what went wrong?
Well, the guy must have come too awful fast. Quick contact of the cops.
They collared Danny in the station?
No. Not till he hit his apartment.
What about the bonds?
Well, Danny was afraid he might have a tail on him, so as soon as he hit the railroad station, he checked the briefcase at the baggage counter. Then he put the claim check in an envelope and dropped it in the mailbox.
Who'd he mail it to?
Well, that's what Yancey came up to tell us. Danny mailed the claim check to you.
No? Did it come in?
No, Danny figured we should get it this afternoon. Then he wants for you to get rid of the bonds and get some cash to him for a mouthpiece.
You see? Where'd he check this time?
North Side Station.
Well, when the baggage checks him, then you run over there and pick the stuff up.
Me?
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
No, why?
There's liable to be 50 cops waiting around that baggage counter.
You just told me that he wasn't picked up till he hit his apartment.
All right, he could have talked since then.
Danny wouldn't talk.
Why don't you pick the stuff up?
Well,
For the same reason I got, huh?
Look, we just can't leave the stuff there. It's too good a score for us. We gotta get some... Wait a minute.
What?
I got an idea. Ellie.
Yes, Bob.
Where are you, honey?
I'm in the bedroom.
Okay.
You're home early, honey. Any luck today?
Yeah, I got a job.
Oh, Bob, that's wonderful. Oh, I'm so excited.
Wait a minute, honey. Don't get too excited.
Why not?
Wait till you hear who I'm working for.
Who?
Pete Webb.
Oh, no, Bob.
Well, Ellie, I had to find a job.
Yeah, but not with Pete. Bob, how could you after the things that he's done to you?
I know what he's done to me, but... We also have to eat.
But, Bob, there are plenty
honey,
of guys.
For two solid months now, I've been pounding the pavement looking for work.
I know, but...
I found out real quick about my friends. They turned out to be a lot of guys who only wanted to be around while I was winning.
But other people...
Other people? Well, I take one look at this nose and these cauliflower ears and practically come right out and tell me they're not interested in hiring a punch-drunk fighter. That's why I finally called Pete.
I understand, honey. I'm sorry.
Okay.
What are you going to do for Pete?
I don't know, but I told him no larceny.
What did he say?
He said the job was clean.
When did he start work?
This afternoon. I got to pick up something for him.
What?
A package that's checked at Northside Station.
The same afternoon in the local FBI field office, Special Agent Jim Taylor is just approaching his desk.
Jim. Oh, Jim.
Oh, yes, Paul.
I've been looking for you.
Huh?
I just left the boss. He's put us both on a case that just came in.
Oh? What are the details of it?
A man named Lawrence Black was on a train en route here from Cleveland. He was robbed of $21,000 in negotiable bonds.
Oh? How was the job done?
The thief slipped some knockout drops into one of Black's drinks.
I see.
When he came to, he gave the police at the station a good description of the man he was drinking with.
Uh-huh.
The description was so good, in fact, that the local police picked up the thief within an hour as he was entering his apartment.
Oh, wait, Paul. If they picked him up, what's the case? What are we working on?
The thief didn't have the bonds on him.
Oh, I see. I presume the police searched his apartment.
From top to bottom. But there wasn't a trace of either the bonds or the briefcase they were in.
Well, are the police sure they've got the right man?
The victim made a positive identification.
I see.
Jim, our job is to find out what he did with those bonds between the time he got off the train and the time he got home.
Okay. Who's the thief, Paul?
His name is Newton. He has a long criminal record.
Newton, huh? What's his first name?
Dan.
Dan Newton?
That's right.
That could be little Danny. Paul, have you got anything on him here? A description, maybe?
Got a whole file right here. Pictures and all.
Swell. Let me have a look at it, huh?
Sure. Here.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah, that's little Danny, all right.
You know him, Jim?
Yes. Yes, and I think I know where the bonds are.
Really?
Yes, you see, little Danny has always used a regular pattern of operation. He rides trains, picks up a victim, clips him, then checks his load at the railroad station as soon as he gets off.
But, Jim, there was no baggage check found on him when he was picked up.
No, there wouldn't be. His usual procedure is to mail the check either to himself or to a friend. Paul, what station did he arrive in?
The North Side Station.
Let's notify the police and have them send a man to that baggage counter at once.
Hey, Bud, how about that bag? I gave you the check 5 minutes ago. Look, can I get some service here?
Oh, brother.
Hey, you, is that the briefcase?
Yeah.
Well, it's about time. Let me have it.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Hmm? You better let me have that briefcase.
Who are you?
Police. Here's the badge.
What is this?
Just give me the briefcase, Hudson.
How do you know me?
I used to watch you fight. Now let's have the bag and come along with me.
What for?
This is an arrest.
Hmm?
I gotta take you in.
Look, I don't get any of this.
You just claimed that briefcase.
Well, so what? I'm picking it up for the guy I work for.
Hudson, that briefcase was stolen.
Hmm?
There's $21,000 worth of negotiable bonds in there.
Well, wait, there must be some mistake.
There's no mistake. I know the briefcase, and I've been waiting an hour to nail whoever picked it up.
Whoever picked it up?
Yeah, now come on.
Wait a minute, I'm being framed.
Come on, I said.
Oh, no, let go of me.
Hey, come back here. Stop or I'll shoot. Hudson, you hear me?
Special Agent Taylor.
Hello, Jim. I'm down at the railroad station. We've gotten a bad break.
Oh, what's that, Paul?
A man picked up the briefcase about 10 minutes ago. An officer attempted to arrest him, but he got away.
With the briefcase?
Yes.
Oh, that is tough.
The police feel they can pick him up pretty quickly, though.
How's that?
The arresting officer recognized the man. Said his name was Bob Hudson, ex-prize fighter.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
Hudson was wounded in the getaway. The officer fired 2 shots at him. Certainly hit him at least once.
Any idea where this Hudson lives?
The police are checking that now.
Paul, have them call me as soon as they find his address.
That you, Bob?
Yeah, honey.
Bob. Bob, what's wrong?
Just let me sit down a minute.
Look at your shirt. That's blood.
Yeah.
Darling, what's happened?
A bullet grazed my shoulder.
Well, I'll call a doctor.
Wait, no doctors, Ellie.
Huh?
The guy with the gun was a cop.
Oh.
I was framed, Ellie. Pete Webb framed me.
Oh, no, darling, how?
What bag I was to call for at the railroad station. It was loaded with stolen bonds. $21,000 worth.
And he sent you there knowing that?
Sure, hoping I'd get away clear.
Oh, this is awful.
Oh, you were right about Pete, honey. I shouldn't have taken that job.
Forget about that. Why did the cop shoot you?
Well, it was going to take me in. I couldn't let Pete's frame go that far, so I busted away from him.
Bob, you shouldn't have done that. Pete was in the wrong, not you.
Well, I can never prove that from the city jail.
Bob, you've just got to let me call the doctor.
I said no, Ellie.
But I can't.
Look,
just...
I wouldn't be here anyway when he came.
What do you mean?
I got a call to make.
What?
I'm going to go see Pete Webb. I'm going right now.
Bob, please listen to me. Your shoulder...
The bleeding stopped.
But you've got to let
Ellie.
Me...
Ellie... I'm going to go see Pete Webb, and I'm going to make him come down to the cops with me and tell the real story about those stolen bonds.
You know who that is in a supporting role there? That's Jack Webb. We were just talking
yeah,
about him.
From Jack.
That's the first portion of This Is Your FBI. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Be listening to the Steve Cochran Show every Monday between 8:30 and 9 a.m. for your chance to win a family pack of 4 tickets to see the Chicago White Sox.
All right. Should we listen to the conclusion now of This Is Your FBI?
Yes.
Let's do it. Here's the conclusion to the friendly frame-up.
Just a minute.
Hello, Louie.
Hiya, Bob. Come on in. Pete, it's Bob Hudson.
Oh, hiya, kid.
Hello, Pete.
What took you so long? I was beginning to get a little worried about you.
No kidding.
Hey, what's with the blood?
In my shirt?
Yeah. What happened?
I got shot.
Huh?
By who?
Cop.
What for?
You should know what for, Pete.
I don't get you.
The briefcase. The briefcase that you framed me into picking up.
I sent you an errand, that's all.
Stop the routines.
Hey, where is the briefcase?
I haven't got it.
The cops get it?
No.
Where is it?
I put it away in a safe place. It's going to stay there until I take both you guys and the bonds to the cops.
You're going to take us to the cops?
That's right.
Pete, this guy really is punchy.
You did frame me. You got to admit that.
Yeah. I admit it. But only to you, not the cops. I was just paying you back for an old score.
What do you mean?
The time you double-crossed me in Bay City.
I never double-crossed anybody in my life.
Remember the time I had you in a main at Bay City? I bet against you. I told you about it. You turn around and win the fight.
I've tried to win every fight.
You're in one now, you ain't gonna win.
Oh, no. I'm taking you both to the cops right now.
Hold the phone.
Hmm?
This gun says different.
That ain't stopping me, Louie.
That's what you think.
No guns, Louie. This is better.
Louie, take this blackjack. When he comes to, keep using it on him until you find out where he stashed that briefcase.
Well, okay, boss. Where you going?
I want some action. I'm going to the fights.
Tonight's case from the files of your FBI illustrates one major point. A point which cannot be stressed too strongly or repeated too often. It is absolutely impossible for a decent, law-abiding citizen to do business with a criminal. The two cannot mix any more successfully than oil and water, because their minds and their hearts are so different. The decent man lives by the credo that he must work for what he gets, and that his fellow man is entitled to the same courtesy and dignity that he himself expects in return. But the criminal regards his fellow men as just so many potential victims, and he looks with contempt on those who work for what they want. Your FBI asks you to remember those things if you're ever tempted to enter into any agreement with a criminal. Remember them and heed them well. Tonight's file continues that same evening at the local FBI field office. Special Agent Jim Taylor has just returned to his office where Special Agent Meriden is waiting for him.
Hello, Paul. Any word from the police on Hudson?
Not since I've been here, Jim. Had any dinner yet?
No, the drugstore's going to send up a sandwich and some coffee. That'll hold me for a while.
The note you left for me said you went to Hudson's house. What happened?
Oh, his wife was there. When I questioned her, she told me that Hudson had been given a job just this afternoon by his old manager, Pete Webb.
Pete Webb?
Yes. Webb's a local character who's on the shady side, but nobody's ever been able to get anything on him.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Hudson says that Webb sent her husband for the briefcase.
Did he know what was in it?
Well, she said no. She said that Hudson returned to the house wounded this afternoon after he'd been at the station, and that he'd gone from there to Webb's apartment.
What for?
To make Webb go to the police with him and admit that the whole thing was a frame.
I see.
So I left Hudson's and went over to Webb's apartment.
Yes?
Webb had gone out to the fights, according to a stooge of his named Louis Slater, who answered the door.
Louis Slater? Where do I know that name from?
Oh, he's a petty larceny hoodlum. He said he'd heard of Hudson, but that he didn't know him, and that Hudson had positively never been to Webb's apartment.
I don't trust people who are so positive.
Neither do I, Paul, but I didn't have a search warrant, so there wasn't much I could do except take his word for it. I'll get it. Special Agent Taylor speaking.
Hello, Taylor. This is Spencer down at headquarters.
Oh, hello, Spencer.
We've got Hudson again.
Hmm?
And this time he won't break loose.
Where'd you find him?
He was unconscious in an alley off Main Street and First Avenue. He's over at City Hospital now.
Still unconscious?
According to last reports, he was. In fact, the doctors say they don't know if he'll ever come out of it.
No. Well, thanks very much, Spencer.
Right.
Bye. Hudson is at City Hospital, unconscious, Paul. Come on, let's get up there.
Thought you were going to wait for me at the apartment.
Yeah, I was, but something important came up. I came to tell
don't
you.
Don't tell me nothing. This round's over. Come on, Sailor. Come on, boy. Get in there now. Keep it left out there.
All right.
Now, what have you got?
A guy from the FBI was around. He was looking for Hudson.
What'd you tell him?
I said I didn't even know the guy.
Good. What'd you do with Hudson?
I dumped him in an alley.
Alive?
Yeah, just about.
That's bad.
Look, you didn't say nothing about knocking him off.
Okay. Did you find out where you put the stuff?
Yeah, I think so.
What do you mean, fake?
Well, he never came to after you conked him. So I frisked him when I found this key.
What is it?
Well, it fits one of those subway locker boxes. It says so right here.
Yeah.
I figured it's probably a box on that station near where Hudson lives. Yeah, the key's got a number on it. We can check.
That's a good idea. Look, Louie,
Why don't you go up and see if you're right?
Are you kidding?
No.
Look, that's how Hudson got where he is. Look, Louie, I want to watch this fight. I'll see you at the gym in the morning.
Dr. Chanchamino, report to emergency.
Hi, Jim. How is he?
Oh, he's still unconscious. They patched up the bullet wounds, but somewhere Hudson took an awful beating.
After he was shot?
Must have been.
You think he got the beating at Webb's place?
Mm-hmm. Could be. I checked on what time Webb got to the fights tonight. He'd have had time to see Hudson and still get to the arena when he did.
Hudson didn't have the bonds on him when they found him, did he?
His pockets were empty, Paul.
What did the doctor think of Hudson's chances?
Oh, 50-50. He might pull out of it, but there's no telling. Comes his wife now.
Hello, Mr. Taylor.
Mrs. Hudson.
The nurse told me you spoke to the doctor.
Yes, that's right.
How is he? Is he going to get better?
Well, Mrs. Hudson, it'll be a little while, probably, before the doctors know any more than they do now.
Here comes one of them now, Jim.
Oh, yes, that's him.
That's Bob's doctor?
Yes.
He's coming over here.
Well, now be calm, Mrs. Hudson. It'll...
Bad news. I know it. I can see it in the doctor's face.
Hey, Tiger, peek him in his office yet?
Yeah, he's in.
Thanks.
That you, Louie?
Pete, I got some news for you.
What is it?
Well, you were worried about me not knocking off Hudson, huh?
Uh-huh.
He died this morning in the hospital.
How do you know?
I heard the rumor from a dozen guys, so I called the hospital.
I see.
They said it was official, and he also told me he died without ever coming to.
That means he couldn't tell the cops where he stashed the bonds.
That's right.
Where's that locker key?
Right here in my kick.
Where do you think we should start looking?
Like I said last night... We go first to the subway station near where Hudson lived.
Okay, let's go.
Pete, the locker should be down at this end of the platform.
Uh-huh. Wait a minute.
What is it?
Train coming.
Oh. It's an express, Pete. It ain't stopping.
Well, come on. Louis, that looks like the locker's down there.
Yeah. Now let's just hope they got number 2177.
We'll just walk by the lockers and take a gander at the numbers as we pass.
Okay.
Do you see what I see?
Good old number 2177.
Let's go to work.
Here's the key.
Okay.
Fits, huh?
Yeah. There we are.
What's in there?
Just what we're looking for.
A briefcase. Oh, swell. Let's open it up, huh?
Not here, stupid. Come on, let's get going.
Wait.
What is it?
That guy coming toward us. He's the guy from the FBI.
You sure?
Yeah.
Let's round and make the other exit quick.
There you are, both of you.
Not a chance.
Oh, they're coming your way.
I see them.
Wait, Pete, we're blocked off.
All right, you two, don't move.
Nice going, Paul. All right, Webb, let's have that briefcase.
What is this?
I don't think I have to explain. Well, Paul, let's call the hospital as soon as we can. Hudson will be happy to know we picked these men up.
Hudson's dead.
You just heard a rumor that he was dead. I planted that rumor with a fight mob. I hoped it would get back to you.
The hospital said he was dead.
They were instructed to say that. Hudson's not only alive, but he told us where the bonds were. He also told us that you probably had the missing key.
This is nothing but lies.
I think you'll change your mind when Hudson's testimony sends you both away for a long, long time.
Pete Webb and his henchman, Louis Slater, were tried in a federal court and given 20 years for violating the National Stolen Property Act. They were then turned over to local authorities and sentenced to an additional long term for attempted murder. And thus, your FBI performed a double function in tonight's case. First, they apprehended the guilty criminals. And second, they proved the innocence of an accused man. It's the everyday job of special agents to arrest the violators of certain federal laws. And the story of their success in that job is in their record and in their reputation. But the second function performed in tonight's case is even more important. Because the basic foundation of good law enforcement must be public confidence. The knowledge that the public has that it will not be victimized in order to build up an impressive record of conviction. That each individual questioned will be treated as innocent until he is proven guilty. That is why every special agent is instructed when he is appointed a member of the Federal Bureau of Investigation that the primary job of your FBI is to protect the American people, and that a major part of that protection is seeing to it that no innocent man be found guilty of a crime he did not commit. In just a moment, we will tell you about next week's exciting case from the files of your FBI. Now, one last word about the Equitable Education Fund. The outstanding feature of this plan is this. It makes sure that your children will be educated no matter what happens. Whether you live or die, they'll get the education you want them to have. So don't wait any longer. Get in touch with your Equitable Society representative soon. Or send a postcard care of this station to the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. Next week, we will dramatize another case from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. A case that graphically illustrates the fate of a supposedly honest businessman who chooses to consort with thieves. Its subject, fraudulent bankruptcy. Its title, Merchants of Arson. The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Life Assurance Society broadcast are adapted from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of persons living or dead is accidental. Tonight, the music was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner. Your narrator was Dean Carlton, and Special Agent Taylor was played by Stacey Harris. This Is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. This is Larry Keating speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community, and inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time when the Equitable Life Assurance Society will bring you another thrilling story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Merchants of Arson on This Is Your FBI.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
There you have it. This Is Your FBI, October 17th, 1947. The Friendly Frame-Up, starring Stacey Harris, produced and directed by Jerry Devine. And you know what, Lisa? That Jerry, he was really divine.
I thought maybe you'd come up with something a little more, with a little more, but no.
That's all I have at this time.
Yeah, gotcha.
It's Sunday.
It's after, Monday.
Well, it's Monday.
It's been a long night.
After two nights of 11 to 2. It's all I got.
Gotcha. Well, then it was good.
I am giving you and the listeners 110%. Every drop of my essence right now.
It was good.
Yeah.
I like your essence.
Yeah, it's Jerry Devine. That Jerry was really divine.
That was a good one. Did you like that, Curtis?
Yeah, it was cool. But good Carl, one. I have no sympathy for you because I was here Friday for the Sox. Then I had you guys, and then I had Plyer. I didn't get home until 7
Did
o'clock.
Did I ask you for
morning.
Sympathy?
No, but I'm just telling you, I'm not giving you any sympathy.
I'll give you sympathy.
Hang on. Can I have some sympathy, Chris?
You have to wait till the store opens.
The sympathy store.
Yeah, the sympathy store.
All right. Let's take a quick break, and then it's more of our hijinks here on the WGN Radio Theater.